Good morning.
How are you guys? You are woo! How are the rest of you? The rest of you are making fun of the first guy. As a continuation of worship and trust and unity with each other, the usher is going to come forward, and this is another way that we worship, to entrust our finances, to say, God, I'm not just in with what I say and sing, but I'm going to put my resources behind it because I believe in what you're doing here and in and through this community, locally, globally, all of that. So this is another act of worship. It's another act of unity as this moment, as the bag goes by. While they're doing that, the truck, if you didn't notice, was out front. And, you know, in a economically stressful time, the non-profits and the charities, they all kind of take the biggest hit because we all kind of go into lockdown mode. And so they've been hurting, and so we've been looking forward to seeing how to help them. And we were discussing it over the past couple of weeks. Hey, should we do the big 22-foot truck, or should we do like a little truck, and then if it fills up, we'll dump it and come back? Or do we want to send like the big truck half full, or how do we want to do this? And we were like, you know what? Not Crosspoint, man. We're going to knock it out of the park, so bring the big truck. And so we filled it first hour, and they had to take it up. Dump it off, and then there was a 26-footer and a 10-footer, which we've filled again, and we've given them a whole new and better problem. So, yay! That's what we do. We give you good headaches, and they're welcome. So, yeah, just great job of understanding that God is up to things well beyond these walls. It's a cool thing to be part of. We are in week two of a series called Stuff Jesus Made Up, and we're going to deal with Jesus' parables, because what we find is, as westernized modern Americans, we kind of come to the scriptures and say, okay, I need some self-help, right? This is about me, so give me the rules. Jesus, give me the 1, 2, 3 bullet points and definitions and help me have the life that I've been after. But Jesus can be a little frustrating, because when you come to him that way and you come to the scriptures that way, is, you know, hey, Bible stands for basic instructions before leaving earth, so let's have it, right? Well, and it doesn't, and that's so cheesy. Never repeat that. But we find Jesus saying, okay, you want me to tell you how to live? Once upon a time. What? He taught almost a third of what he says in the New Testament are these stories, these parables. And it messes with our head that Jesus is a first century Palestinian Jewish sage. And he's not interested in coming and making this easy for you so that you don't have to think about it. He gives you something and puts images in your head that you have to discuss and unpack and take layers off to find out what's underneath, so that we'll continue to wrestle with it, as we have done now for 2,000 years. That was his intention. Following Jesus, difficult as this is for our brains to understand, is less about following him around taking notes, but following him and taking pictures, because he's dealing with real life. And that's what it means. And that's how the parables help us to understand the mind and the heart of God. So with that in mind, you know, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about some different parables, as Jonathan launched us into last week. For the next couple of weeks, we're going to get into some heavy stuff, some really deep stuff, and today is not an exception. So I'm going to give you the punchline for today. We're going to talk about forgiveness. And right away, I just want to acknowledge that most of you, you've heard a forgiveness sermon before, and I promise you're going to hear one again. It's like, okay, yeah, I know forgiveness is important, but no one's ever been able to sit down and listen to my list of exemptions. No one's ever been able to give me to sit down and help me understand why I already know that it doesn't apply to me. Like, if I could just have a few minutes with Jesus when he was done with his parable, I'd explain my circumstances, how I've been sinned and wounded and disappointed and offended, and he'd go, let me come up with a new parable, because I hadn't considered that. And so I recognize that some of you, you've been hurt a lot. Some of you, you've been hurt a little, and over time, you've made it a big deal, and everything in between. And so I want you to know that I understand when we talk about forgiveness, many of us go, I know forgiveness is a good idea, but I'm not going to do it. And I want you to know that today, you know, I wrestled with, hey, there's some cool history and context and stuff about the Jews and what they believed about forgiveness and the Day of Atonement and all that. I was going to give you a lot of that stuff to make you really, really think about forgiveness in a new way, but I kept bumping up against the very simple message of Jesus in Matthew chapter 18. And when I say simple, I don't mean insignificant, not without a ton of weight. And so I'm just going to give it to you and let you hear Jesus, and then let you feel the weight of of how important forgiveness is. I'm not at the end going to say, go call your mom. I know you've heard that sermon before, and I'll probably say it on the next one, but I'm saying that this is about taking Jesus seriously. And some of you, you've already done that. Some of you, you're checking him out. You think he was smart, but that's about as far as you've gotten. I'm glad you're here. But this, you need to understand, as I understand as well as anybody, that what I'm about to say is going to mess with your head. It's going to bother you. And it's paradoxically bothersome and beautiful, much like the kingdom always is. And so let's dive in. The first book of the New Testament, Matthew chapter 18, verse 21. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to like seven times? First word, then. It assumes that this question that Jesus finally asks is in response to something he's just seen or heard. So let's go back a few verses. And let's hear what Jesus has just said to make Peter ask this question. Verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault. Just between the two of you. You hear that? Jesus knows it's going to happen. And he says, when it happens, you go straight to him or her, just the two of you. You don't put it on your blog. You don't call your aunt. You don't go to the bar and bemoan all night. You don't talk to other people about it. You go right to the source. And many of us know that that's a great idea, but it's too scary. Well, your lack of desire to want to dive into scary is another message. Jesus is saying, when your brother sins against you, you go to them and you tell him what happened. If he listens to you, you have won, or the Greek language would say, you have gained your brother. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that, and then he quotes an Old Testament law, that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. So they didn't listen to you, and so you go back, and you don't gossip about it. You don't try to tear their character down to build yourself back up. You tell two or three others, hey, man, this thing that's going on, I need some help. I went to it. It didn't go very well. Can we pray together? Can we talk about it? And I'm going to take you guys understand what I'm trying to do in the spirit of peace, unity, and love. And let's go back over to this guy. And my goal is to make this right. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. Now, Jesus does not have in mind what we're doing right now. This is not what he's talking about when he says the church. This is a text that's been torn out of context before, and it's been very hurtful. Where I've been wounded, so I'm going to stand up, hand me the microphone, preacher, and I'm going to tear somebody down so I can obey this. But you all don't know me, and you all don't know each other, and that's not what he's talking about. To really get inside Jesus, what Jesus is intending here, we have a small group ministry here at Crosspoint, life groups. Many of you are in one. That's more what Jesus means when he says church. It's a group of people who actually know each other, and it's smaller. And a lot of the churches come together and form the capital C church. But when he says tell the church, it's tell the people you do life with in following Jesus. So you would go to this group of people and you would say, you guys have probably noticed that our wholeness has been fractured, that our oneness has been split. You probably noticed the tension over dinner. And let me tell you what's going on. Let me tell you what went down and what I've done up to this point, how I've tried to honor and be loving, and et cetera, et cetera. If he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan. Now, I think that this word is actually supposed to be translated Gentile. Pagan carries with it a lot of baggage. It's just the word here would be Gentile, a non-Jew. Treat him as you would one of the non-Jews or a tax collector. In other words, you are now within your rights to treat this man or this woman as somebody that doesn't know what's in this book, that doesn't know what God is like, somebody that is currently captivated by sin. The question is, how does Jesus treat Gentiles and tax collectors and pimps and prostitutes and everybody else? How does Jesus treat them in the Gospels? Lovingly. He's pretty cool to them. So it's not you can now shun them and get rid of them and just you can pretend like they're dead. They're dead to you now. It's, okay, these rules are no longer going to work. We are starting over with a new set of assumptions, and it's a new kind of thing. This is what Jesus said to make Peter scratch his head and ask the question about being forgiven seven times, to which Jesus replies in verse 22. Jesus answered Peter, I tell you, Peter, not seven times, but 77 times. Not 77, but 70 times seven is what he says. Not just seven, but 70 times seven, Peter. If you've been studying Jesus for a while, you know he doesn't mean stop at 490. Oh, that's offense 491, now you're dead. That's not... Sages would do this. It's a rhetorical device to exaggerate, to make your point, and to contrast the smaller you go greater. Jesus is saying, no, this isn't a forgiveness issue. You keep forgiving and forgiving and forgiving and forgiving and forgiving. But Jesus knows when you put people together, things break down. Jesus knows when you get a room full of sinners, sin will happen from time to time. And Jesus isn't so naive as to think, one, that it doesn't happen, and that when it does happen, you just go ahead and celebrate being abused. Jesus doesn't think that pleases the Father. But even his consequences, even what he's putting in place for us to employ with each other when community breaks down, it's others-centered love. It's, I want you to focus on the sinner more than the sin that's happened to you. I want you to think more about the offender than the offense. Like everything else, I want you to give yourself to the person. Because Jesus, he's either brilliant or naive. Jesus thinks that that's what redeems. Jesus knows it's going to make more sense to retaliate. You've done this to me. I'm going to do the same thing in kind back to you to let you know how bad you've hurt me. Jesus knows that that's going to be the reflex. Yet, he says that it's good in mercy and forgiveness and love and grace. That's what actually redeems. Now, for many of us, we need to grab a hold of this as a new dimension of the word generosity. When we talk about generosity, and Christians, followers of Jesus, are supposed to be radically generous people. When we think generosity, we think, okay, it's offering, it's money, it's what we do locally, globally. Hey, it's our stuff out in that truck. And yes, it is. But there's a whole other component that's no less important. It's forgiveness, forgiveness. We are supposed to be radically generous forgivers in the same way as generous givers. Jesus knows things break down. But it's not a forgiveness issue. It's about the other person, because Jesus is not vindictive. He's redemptive. Jesus does not retaliate. He reconciles. Jesus thinks good always wins. He's either genius or he's naive, but Jesus thinks in his brain that goodness, mercy, forgiveness always, always wins. That's why he was able to say back in Matthew chapter 5, you've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. You've all done that. That's easy to do, isn't it? I mean, even your pets do that. Dogs like to hang out with dogs that are nice to them. The one that bites them, they bite back and breaks apart. That's great. That works on every level of life. Love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I'm telling you, Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. He doesn't say those who used to be your enemy and then got their act together and apologized and made it all right. And now you can love them. Now you can pray for them. It's present tense. I want you to love your enemies currently. I want you to pray for your persecutors currently. It defies what will come naturally to you, but I'm telling you, this is how it works. This is a theme for Jesus. That's why it was a theme for his followers. This gave Paul the courage, the audacity to write Romans chapter 12, verse 21. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's going to make sense that you'll want to retaliate, that you'll want to press charges and let them know, this is what you did to me. I'm going to do it back to you. It makes sense. It works on a national. Just watch the news. Let's just keep escalating and see who can out-evil the other. Jesus says, that's going to make sense to you. But don't be overcome by evil. Overcome it with good. Jesus believes this. Now, Jesus has said this up to this point, and Peter's still scratching his head. The other listeners are going, seriously? Has he ever had a life? Does he know that? And some of you, you're like, well, that works for the Bible, but as soon as I walk out of this room, really? And so Jesus continues. Verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like. He looks around, he knows what he's just said, he sees people kind of looking at each other like, this guy does not know what he's talking about, and he knows that many of us are thinking the same thing, and so he goes, okay, so therefore, the kingdom is like. Now, what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to lean in with a different part of our brain, because he just said, let me tell you what the kingdom is like. These aren't bullet points, I'm getting ready to tell you a story, and I want you to lean in and give meaningful thought to what I mean underneath what I mean. I want you to find yourself in the story. I want you to discover and unpack the reality that I'm going to tuck into parable form so you can take it with you for millennia. And so what we're going to do is we're going to read through this. I'm going to insert some thoughts. You all lean in, listen to Jesus, and allow yourself to understand the reality beneath what Jesus is actually saying. Therefore, the kingdom is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. Debt in the Semitic mind for the Jews way before the time of Jesus was a way of describing what you owe God. When you sin, when you make an infraction against the goodness and the holiness of God, the way to describe that for hundreds of years before the time of Jesus was already debt language. So when Jesus starts talking about accounts and money, right away the listeners go, this isn't actually about money. As he began to settle with his servants, as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. One of his servants owes 10,000 talents. Some of the people who heard Jesus said this would probably have smiled or snickered a little bit. And here's why. In the modern equivalent of 10,000 talents is somewhere between $30 and $40 million. This guy owes more than Israel's national debt to this king. I mean, this is a ridiculous amount of money that Jesus has just used to tell his story. Like, how in the world could you incur that much debt? How many times do you have to go to the camel races before you amount? Forget it. 10,000, $40 million of debt was brought to the king. Since he was not able to pay, and everybody's like, well, yeah. The master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. Does selling him and his family and all he had repay this mountain of debt? No. In fact, it sets you back because now you've removed his capacity for earning money. This is only retribution. This is just punishment. It's just justice. By itself, punitive justice. That's all it is. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged. And I will pay back everything. What has he just done? He's just admitted that he owes it. He doesn't say, you are ruthless. This is unfair. I don't owe this. He just confessed, I do owe you every penny. King, you are absolutely right. I will pay you back everything because I owe you all of what you have said. And the servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. Why? And then there was sound, and it was good. All right, where was I? Let's do offering again. Seriously, I have no idea where we were. I was in the Bible, Matthew 18. He canceled the debt. You get free coffee. He cancels the debt. Now, why does he cancel the debt? Because when he looks at this man, and he realizes, I could throw him in jail and throw his whole family in jail and try to get even. I could go the retribution route, but that doesn't actually pay me back. Because how do you pay back murder? Well, you do 80 years. Nope. How do you pay back rape, greed? How do you pay back gossip, cowardice, bitterness? How do you actually pay that back? Well, there's consequences, and you punish them, and that, no, the guilt remains. The king's very wise in this story. He recognizes, if I want this debt to go away, I have to forgive it. Forgiveness is the only way debt can be removed. Forgiveness is the only way to assuage guilt. It's the only thing that gets rid of it. He looks at this guy and says, you can't pay me back, and retribution isn't payment. So I cancel the debt, and now it's gone. When you listen to this, and maybe you can assume the minds of the first people that heard this, what do you assume is the demeanor of the forgiven servant? Gratitude. Gratitude. Millions of dollars of debt in this parable, and it's gone. I mean, your mortgage company calls you and says, tough economy, huh? Yes. Yeah, I've been looking at your rates, and just good grief, you're stuck in this thing for 30 years if you do it all right. Hey, listen, we took care of it. It's gone. What's your demeanor? Well, since this only works in sermons,
Who is this?
You know. No way. No way. Gratitude is the assumed response of this man's heart. But Jesus continues.
When that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants, because this the playing field's even for all the servants. There's no rank and position. There's a king and then everybody else's servant. So he goes to one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. He owes him dinner. This is just a few bucks in our modern equivalent. He owes him 20 bucks. And he grabbed him and began to choke him. He takes him by the throat, and I can hear him through clenched teeth say, "Pay back what you owe me," he demanded. And the fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, "Be patient with me, and I will pay you back." Does that sound familiar? But he refused. Instead, he went and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. Ridiculous. This isn't about payment, is it? It's about revenge. When the other servants saw what happened, they were greatly distressed, and they went and they told their master everything that had happened. And then the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant." He didn't call him wicked for the debt, for everything he had done in the parable. Now it's how he's acting to his brother. Isn't that interesting? "You wicked servant," he said. "I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" Answer that question. Yes, there's no wiggle room. The answer to that question is yes. In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. Ludicrous. He's in now even a worse spot, in a worse spot to be able to pay back. This is about revenge, retaliation, retribution. "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." Nice, warm, snuggly Jesus, who loves me, this I know. Wow. Wow. Now, don't let go of what Jesus said about forgiveness. But I don't know if you've been following Jesus, or maybe it's your first time in church or whatever. Jesus is intensely serious about forgiveness's role in the kingdom life. I mean, this is a theme for him. Look back at Matthew chapter 6. He says, "If you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you don't forgive men their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins." Wow. He says that this is the very next thing that Jesus says after he teaches the Lord's Prayer. After amen, he says that. He is so serious about the critically important and central role of forgiveness in the kingdom life. It's so important to him. And so the question is, if you're taking Jesus seriously, is it important to you? Are you asking difficult questions about forgiveness? Are you wrestling with it in your head? What does this mean? What is forgiveness? What isn't forgiveness? And man, when do I know that it's present? And so I want to offer a few thoughts. I'm going to give you 5 thoughts on forgiveness. And it's not an exhaustive list. I'm not smart enough, and I haven't lived long enough to give you more than what I came up with. And on top of that, I'm going to give you 5, and I'm going to talk through them a little bit of what I think forgiveness is and isn't, and some new thoughts on it, maybe for some of you. But I can't even resolve what I'm going to offer because we only have so much time. And so the implication is that you get with people, you get with your life group, you get with somebody, and you figure out, if this is that important to the Son of God, if that much is hanging in the balance, then I want to know about forgiveness and what it means in my life. And some of you, you're getting really caught up on, is Jesus saying, if I don't have this right, I'm going to go to hell? No, he's saying, if you don't get this right, you're inviting hell. You're making hell happen in very real right now between you and I. It's just that important to the kingdom life that it can kill it. And so the implication is what I'm about to share. This sounds a little self-important, but what I tell you, write it down and go back through the podcast later on and listen and think about this, to write it down. Because Jesus' words, you can feel the weight of them. And so when you walk out that door, we've got to wrestle with what they mean. And so I'm going to give you a few things. The first thing I want to give you is this, and this is really, really important. Forgiveness is condemnation. Forgiveness is condemnation. I can't really see very clearly. You in the button-up light blue right here. What's your name? Jeff. I forgive you. What I just imply? that he did something. You know, and here he's like, yeah, thanks, whatever, you know. I didn't do anything to you, you know. I mean, know you. Go say that to somebody randomly on the street corner. Hey, nice shirt, I forgive you. What? I didn't do anything to you. It's actually condemnation. Forgiving is condemnation. You're naming the person and the specific offense that they have done to you. You're calling them guilty by forgiving them. Forgiveness is condemnation. We're so scared that to forgive somebody is like condoning it. Man, if I forgive them, it's like letting them off the hook. It's like telling them it was okay. It's a big shrug of the shoulders. It's not. Forgiveness condemns the behavior that happened. It names it specifically. But here's the difference. It doesn't take revenge. It doesn't retaliate. It names it and then releases it, which leads me to the next thing. The forgiveness is final. Forgiveness is final. I can't forgive you and also be hoping and plotting how you're going to pay. I can't say that the debt has been canceled and still be serving as a collection agency. They're mutually exclusive. It's final. When I forgive you, I'm not requiring to be paid. I'm not requiring you to earn it. This is the mystical part of forgiveness that can only work in Jesus, is I am canceling it. I am absorbing your guilt. I'm not going to pretend like it was okay. And there may be consequences, but those consequences will be for your benefit, not so that I can get my revenge, because this is about love and unity. It's final. Jesus said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Why would our Redeemer tell you to do that if what he thought was redemptive was to return evil in kind so people would learn their lesson? Why would our Redeemer tell us to do those things if it didn't redeem? If you're trusting Jesus, then you're stepping into a new world that loves and forgives people before they even ask for it, which is an interesting facet of the finality, because you can forgive and still have this sense of incompletion. And that's because many of us have only forgiven in our heads. Something happened to us and we said, just let it go. And over the years, we thought we let it go, but every Christmas and every anniversary, it comes back up. I thought I let this go. That's like giving a gift in your head. Forgiveness is primarily about the other person. It doesn't matter what the talk shows are telling us. You do get some sense of relief from it. But it's primarily for the other person. It's a gift. Gifts have to be given. Until they're given, they're not gifts. And so if it feels incomplete, it's probably because you never, it's not evil, but you stunted the process by only dealing with it up here. And you have to go and deal with it. And some of us are terrified to do that because what if they push back and don't accept it? What if they don't admit that what they did was wrong? It's going to tear the scab off. I'm going to bleed again. Forgiveness, just like love, is something you give regardless of the person's ability to reciprocate. Man, what if they don't admit what they did was wrong? It's just like love. And you, as a follower of Jesus, are called to be forgiving. But if they don't accept it, then they're not forgiven. You do your job. Well, how many times? Because this is getting ridiculous. Ask Jesus. 490, 491. If it feels incomplete, it's because ultimately it's communal. But it is final insofar as we forgive and we no longer operate out of what went wrong. Which leads me to my next thought. It's not forgetting. Don't ever say forgive and forget. It's not possible. People try to drink and smoke their way into forgetting. That's actually a really bad thing. Forgive and remember. That's the Jesus way. God doesn't forget what we did. Even though the Bible says he doesn't bring it to mind anymore, for him to not know something, it would be that there's things God doesn't know. That's a less God. What he does is he doesn't bring it to mind and evaluate you based on what went wrong anymore. To forgive you, I don't call that part to mind anymore. Remember, so that you can tell the story of redemption. Remember, just don't operate out of what went wrong anymore. So that you in 10 or 20 years, you can say, he did what to you and you stayed married? Yeah, Jesus taught me forgiveness like that. She did what and she continued? You let her remain employed? Yeah. Yeah, Jesus taught me that. Redemption, that forgiveness. Wow. If I can forget it, why do I need to forgive? It's not even in my head anymore. Forgive and remember so the story can be told. Which leads me to another point, that it's from your heart. Jesus said, forgive your brother from your heart. Which part of that I hate, because I'd rather just forgive you with my mouth. But Jesus says that if you're forgiving somebody, it's down inside of you. That you're wishing the person well from the inside of you to the inside of them. That you don't say, I forgive you, and secretly daydream and fantasize about getting even. I can't say that I forgave her, and then I'm hoping she shows up to the 20-year reunion 100 pounds overweight. That doesn't work. Down inside of me, I have to be wishing the person well. I have to be hoping that even though they stole from me, I hope that they do financially well. Even though they were abusive, I hope that they are experiencing wholeness and that they're letting that go in their own mind. I am trying to wish this person what I would want for myself. Good life in every sense of the word. I had a guy that approached me when I was 16 years old. I knew him. He was about 20. And he charges me after work. I worked at a store, and I come out, and he pins me up against the hood of my truck, and he starts yelling at me about having messed with his younger brother, which was mostly true. I was doing that. I didn't put a hand on him, but I was just sarcastic. I thought it was going over his head. He's picking up all of it, and he told his older brother. So I'm ambushed after work, and I'm pinned up against the hood of this car, and I'm looking behind him, and there's 8-10 people, all of which are my friends that I know too. And I'm up against the hood of my truck like, hello. And up until just literally like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I realized that I don't really have an emotional response to that anymore, but I never did the work of sorting through that to let that go. Over half my life ago, and I still fantasize about what it would have been like to have 10 seconds a head up as he's running towards me just to put my foot out at belt level. Boom, he hits my foot and he falls down in the fetal position. I'm like, what? And everybody comes and stands behind me. You're like, what? And I grew up in a farming community, so I don't know why it's ghetto in my head, but that's how I was playing through it. I'm still fantasizing about all the things I could have said, things I could have done. My friends, like, what, you're going to do this? And all these just zingers that I would have had. And I realized, man, that's over half my life ago. And see, what I had to go back through and say, man, I really haven't let go. I haven't forgiven him. I haven't released that debt. And so I had to play his story through and realize, yeah, just a few years before that, his father, a doctor, was murdered in his doctor's office. And so the family very irrationally started to fight for each other, just like I would. They would tolerate no ill speech toward each other, just like I would operate it. And I had to wish them well and hope that wholeness has come and that brokenness would come and just sorting through that. And I hadn't let it go. You can't have forgiven somebody and still be trying to figure out in your mind what it would take to feel better about what went wrong. Which leads me to a final point before we step into communion. And you're going to hate this one most of all. The forgiveness is not a feeling. It's a choice. Just like love. That you will forgive while often not feeling forgivingly. It's a choice, just like love. What kind of God would command feelings? What kind of God would command that you do things you can't control? See, God's into behavior and action. That's what he commands. Love and forgive, because it's not going to occur to you. Retribution. Revenge, that's what's going to pop into your head. I command you to forgive. How many times? Ask Jesus. It's a choice. It's a choice rooted in the trust of a good and gracious God. It's a choice. It's a choice between two worlds is what it is. And Jesus is emphatic. You cannot have it both ways. You have to pick a world. You cannot accept forgiveness from God and not live in that world towards each other. Because whatever world I choose, that's the world I have to face God from. Whatever world I choose to engage my friends and my neighbors and my enemies and my persecutors, whatever world I choose to stand from there, that's the same one I got to face God from. Jesus will not let us have it both ways. And I understand, because I'd like to have it both ways. I would like to have it both ways. Because I recognize that I have done some really dark things. I have sinned against the beauty and the love and the perfection of my King. I have amassed a mountain of debt, which I cannot repay. I have treated his daughters like wrapped pieces of meat. I have treated his sons with theft and lying and cowardice and gossip. I have raped and pillaged a good world made by a good God. I am in debt to my King, and I can't pay back. If I had 1,000 lifetimes, I can't pay it back. I could pretend to. I can't. And so God forgives it, because the only way to get rid of guilt, the only way to get rid of guilt is to forgive it. And so I come to a point where I recognize, I need this. God, I need you to put a cross in my mountain of debt. And I begin to live a life wondering if it could actually be true that everything I had done, yeah, even that, is wiped away. I'm freely given something from God. I have offended him, but I have been freely given forgiveness. But I take that and I go into my very real life, and something or somebody, whatever it is, something happens. And now I have to make a choice. Has what I've done to the beauty and the goodness of God now become secondary to my pain, to my offense? Because I don't argue that, and this is beautiful, and it's good, and it's noble, and you can make really good stories out of this, but now I have exempted myself because I can't see past how now I have been offended. I have been hurt. Now I'm in pain, and my pain dictates how I do this. It was this until real life happened, but now it's my pain and my sense of having been offended and disappointed and broken and hurt. That is how I am now operating, but I have to choose. And I know what some of you are saying right now. Well, I get your point, but that was staged. You knew what was coming. I'm fascinated that none of you would say that my face would feel any different whether or not I knew it was coming or not. Because what we would say is, oh, we're not talking about physical pain. There's a pain that hurts worse down on the inside. That's why love isn't a feeling, because true pain isn't a feeling. Love exists down where the real offense exists, down in the core of who you are, in your heart. And I have two choices, but I have to pick. I can live enslaving myself to people who have indebted themselves to me, handing them my happiness and my wholeness and my life, and saying, I can't experience my life until you pay me what you owe. I can live that way, or I can cancel the debt. Now that sometimes there's consequences that need to happen, but they're all redemptive. It's for the other person, not for my sense of ego or pride or so that I can feel good about getting revenge. I can live as a debt collector, never, ever, ever collecting that debt, because you can't. You can't go back and fix what went wrong. Or I can forgive. The only way to cancel debt is to forgive it. And it's outrageous for Jesus to take freely and then withhold. Because Jesus says, if I admit that I have debt that I cannot pay here, and then turn and not give that here, what I am saying is, I had mercy and forgiveness coming, but he, she, they, those, they don't. You might even forgive them, but I won't. I've just told God my sin wasn't as bad as his.
And suddenly, according to Jesus, I have just told the king, not with lip service, but in my behaviors and in my attitudes and in the way that I choose to live, I have just told the king, I agree, it's beautiful, but I am choosing to live in a world, I choose the world, where debt has to be repaid. Because you can't live in both. I don't know how you've been hit. Some of you, you're like, man, I wish that's all that would happen. That would have been easy. I don't know what he did to you, what he said to you. I don't know where she went and why she didn't come back. I don't know why they did that to you over and over and over and over. I don't know why they kept saying that. I don't know why they never got around to saying that, because all you wanted to hear was that one word and they just refused. They gave you the opposite. I don't know why. But you have to choose. Are you going to live loving primarily you or others? You have to choose. And it is not possible without the Spirit of Christ. If you are not a follower of Jesus, everything I just said is completely irrational, and I give that to you. I agree. Outside of what we see in the cross, this cannot happen. And so we're going to celebrate that. And so we're going to take communion right now. And communion is the celebration of Jesus' body being broken and blood being spilled. His body absorbed the guilt. That's the only way to get rid of it, is he absorbed it. He didn't wait for us to pay back. He didn't retaliate. He absorbed it into his body. He covers it with his blood. He has obscured your past. He has obscured the past of those who have hurt you. It's covered. And so in communion right now, we're going to take a few minutes. And I want you to, in the spirit of parable, receive the bread and the cup. If you're not a follower of Jesus and you're not ready to do this, I understand. Because this is truly an act of worship. Take the bread and the cup, and in the spirit of parable, receive it from God. Not the person who hands it to you, but from God. And acknowledge, I can't pay you. I cannot pay you. And then as you take the elements and you pass the elements, maybe it's not the person that's actually sitting next to you, but in the spirit of parable, replace them in your imagination with the man, the woman, the group, the people that wounded you. Freely I have received, and now freely I give. And I'm not going to pretend like I liked what happened, but I give. Because I am a generous forgiver. Because I don't want to block the stream and the circuitry of grace flowing in and through me.
question becomes, what does this look like for each of us individually? And I have no idea. I have no idea what this looks like for you. Let me tell you what unforgiveness looks like. Just watch the news. Watch as nations try to return evil for evil and to crush enemies in kind, saying, no, we've got it this time. This time evil will finally be removed. Watch groups of people continue to hate each other and not even know why anymore. Watch family members sit across from the big table every Thanksgiving and not remember why, other than something happened and it hasn't yet been reconciled, hasn't been forgiven. And that's why we don't say her name, his name. That's why these two don't talk. That's why this person walks into the room and she walks out. Unforgiveness looks like what goes on in your head day to day. That your whole body is drenched in adrenaline at work because all you want to do is get even with so-and-so. Or at your own home, it's unforgiveness, unnamed, undealt with issues. That's what unforgiveness looks like. And so why don't we be a community that tries something new? And by something new, I mean something ancient. The way of God, who isn't overcome by evil, but overcomes it with good. We try to enter into the vulnerable and the risky realm of doing for others what has been done freely for us, and let's tell that story. I'm tired. Are you tired? I'm tired of the other stories. Let's tell a new story, which is a very ancient story of our God. Let's all stand. Pray over us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive those who are indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. Amen. Freely you have received, now go freely give.